welcome back to Sofa Science on potentially the most professional looking Sofa Science you will ever see. So don't let this raise your expectations. But I am joined by Hank Green.
Hello. Thanks for coming to Missoula.
That's all right. Yeah, I am in the Complexi Studios right now. It's nice.
I'm glad you think so.
There's a lot of channels going on here.
It showed you very clearly how not professional things can get around here.
Yeah, it is just as haphazard as things are back at home.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's all great. Right. So first question is all first questions go. Who are you?
I'm Hank Green. I am a United States resident. I live in Montana. I have a child and a wife. And I have... YouTube channels. That's it.
Do you want to describe any more about the YouTube channels?
Yeah, so I host and created SciShow, which is a popular science communication show where we talk about like news, but we also talk about things that happened in the 1700s. So like whatever we find that's fascinating, we make shows about it. And I also helped with my brother start Crash Course, which teaches like late high school, early college courses to help students who are taking those things and teachers who are teaching them. Water would come in from the Flint River and be treated at Flint's water treatment plant. Now, 4 years after that switch, we know that it damaged hundreds of millions of dollars of infrastructure, caused deadly bacterial outbreaks that killed at least 12 people, and exposed thousands of children to high levels of lead in their drinking water. There are places to learn about the story of how this happened, was covered up, and was eventually recognized, and the underlying situations that caused these massive mistakes to be made. So let's talk about the science of water and how something as seemingly simple as switching to a different source of water could lead to so many bad, but also seemingly unrelated outcomes. And I am probably most frequently stopped or like recognized for that. People are like, you helped me get my nursing degree. Thanks.
Oh,
like that is my, which is like the best.
Yeah. Would you call yourself a science YouTuber?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool.
I would.
There's so many things that you do and only a subset of them are science. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. No, I definitely do. I mean, SciShow is the thing that I work on most. Like in, like if by like filming time, it's definitely the thing that I am spend the most time on. And then I also like when I... You know, even when I think about, like, how I communicate on other platforms, like, there's always a component of it. Like, when my brother and I have a podcast that's, like, answering advice questions, but also at the end I deliver the news from Mars.
You do, yeah.
And when I'm on Twitter, like, you know, even if 75% of the day is like, me talking about my book or me talking about how I'm worried about the future of America, there is, you know, in any given week, probably a few really good science facts I found.
Yeah. Science is usually doing some pretty fun stuff. I try and block out as much world news and politics as possible. And the science gets through.
Right.
Just because it's just so depressing otherwise.
Right,
I don't need a constant stream of bad news going straight into my brain. I can search for the news if I want to read the news. But just passively going into my head, I don't need any more news.
That sounds lovely. I don't know how to not have that happen.
No.
I don't know. I have convinced myself that I need to always be aware of the bad things that are happening.
They always get through.
Yeah.
But just not in the same quantity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is sort of believing that I need to have some awareness of how these things are being discussed.
Okay. Yeah.
And then that allows me to. Would then allow me to discuss things in a way that would be more receptive to people who are less like me.
Okay.
Or that would allow me to do a better job of riling up the people who have my values, which is a thing that I've been trying to do less of.
It sounds like, because obviously if the other side, assuming that the world is split perfectly in two and there are sides, you don't want them riling up their side. So is it right for you to rile up our side?
I mean... Is it right? I don't know that this is a moral question.
Okay.
Is it the most successful path? I think that remains to be seen.
Okay.
What it has seemed to me, this is all very, you know, unscientific, but it has seemed to me that we are getting better and better at mobilizing through outrage and fear.
Yeah.
And worse at reaching out to people who might not be automatically sympathetic to our viewpoints.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So I don't. I think a lot about, like, I think a ton about how to solve that problem, and I have not come up with anything.
Okay. Well, let's come up with something that, let's move on to something that you have knowledge about.
Okay.
Which is your history. Let's talk about you.
Oh.
How did you get started? Though I normally ask this question, though I think because your time on the internet precedes science YouTube, I would say.
Yeah.
So I doubt that a lot of your experience in coming into science YouTube is going to be vastly applicable to people nowadays because it's such a different scene. But I think that there are probably still some things that would be interesting.
So who's my audience? Is it people who are interested in science communication?
Who are you?
It's
a mix. It's people that kind of want to go into science YouTube or people that are just curious about you.
Yeah, I definitely was influenced a lot by science communication, but not YouTube science communication, because it didn't exist.
Yes.
I started on YouTube back when the platform, like, there wasn't a way to monetize. There was very little, you know, looking back, there was very little on the platform.
But
at the time,
YouTube,
it felt like there was a ton of stuff happening on the platform. But before YouTube?
Yeah. What was your science background?
So I mean, my dad was the state director of the Nature Conservancy when I was growing up in Florida. Mm-hmm. The Nature Conservancy is a organization in the U.S. They also work internationally that basically buys land so it doesn't get developed. They buy land to protect it. It's a conservation organization. And so he was frequently working with field scientists in, you know, mostly like natural resources and policy stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to go out into the field and see science being practiced, and like this dumbest things made me excited about that. And we got to ride around on ATVs and see, like, and then go into the off, like, studios and see people, like, with their computers, which were very new, and their zip drives and, like, mapping GIS stuff. And so I was, you know, that was very interesting to me. And I was encouraged in that direction by my dad, but also by teachers. And I think that it was just like, it was something that I was like, I expressed interest in and was sort of like, you are expressing interest in that. Let us open a path for you.
Yeah.
Because I had good teachers and good parents and had that. And I probably, you know, starting in high school was, you know, reading science fiction that was in many ways like hard science fiction, science communication stuff. Like, you know, you can learn stuff from Michael Crichton books. You can learn, but like even more, you can learn from harder science fiction. So I was reading that kind of stuff and getting into that. And then reading Scientific American. I've been subscribed to Scientific American for 20 years or more. And that's crazy to think. And, you know, always, you know, had, like, there was a piece of me, and I was sort of before Bill Nye. Like, I didn't watch Bill Nye as a kid. I watched Beakman's World, which was like Bill Nye.
Beakman, as in the Muppet character.
That's Beaker.
Okay.
But close. Beakman was a wild-haired, science-y guy, and he had various assistants and a rat man who lived in his lab.
Okay.
The good show. So, and I loved that as a, you know, kid. That was like a Saturday morning thing, I feel like.
And so it was on telly. Did you ever think, I want to do that job when I grow up?
I think mostly I thought I want to be a scientist.
Okay.
Because, like, and also, like, they're, like, probably the most important book I read in my life was Red Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson.
Okay.
Not because, like, it led me to a lot of decisions that affected me long term.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, there was a character in the book who was, I identified a lot with, who was a biochemist, who I, you know, and I was like, I'm going to go to school for biochemistry because of that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's why I got a degree in biochemistry.
Power of science communication.
There definitely could have been, like, times at which, like, if I wasn't, like, enjoying it, I would have, like, changed my major, but I liked it the whole time. So it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So young Hank has got a biochemistry degree.
I mean, young Hank, he's not that young by that time. He's 22.
Okay. Younger Hank has got a biochemistry bachelor's or master's?
Bachelor's.
Bachelor's. And then what?
And then I got a job in a lab.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I sort of just started applying. I wasn't sure if I wanted to get a master's or if I wanted to go into a PhD. I was actually pretty sure I didn't want a PhD. I was like, I felt like I had specified a lot already.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I was going to get a PhD in biochem or molecular biology, I was just going to be so, like, you know, so like focused on something that, and like, I think that that is like, that is both like the amazing thing about science right now and the terrible thing about science right now is that like when you get your PhD, you're going to be studying something that like you and 25 people in the world know about.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean that it isn't super important. And it doesn't mean that it isn't going to have like impacts and, you know, be useful to people outside of your field. But I don't know. I felt a little bit like maybe I wasn't cut out for it. Maybe I wasn't smart enough for it. And so I just was like, okay, well, I'm just going to get a job in a lab. I first worked in a research institute working on anti-cancer therapy. And that was like right out of school. It was with one of my professors and it was intended to be a temporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
That ended. And then I got a job doing quality control for a pesticide company. And it was awful. It was just me. I had my own lab.
Yeah.
As a 22-year-old.
Oh my God, you're just in a room on your own with all these chemicals.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mostly, honestly, it was like I wasn't synthesizing anything.
Yes,
so it was like,
still.
Yeah. And I, yeah, it was extremely boring. I listened to a lot of audiobooks. There was a family of armadillos that lived there. So I did get to hang out with armadillos a lot. And yeah, and I would like have phone conversations with my boss. About. And then my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, was working in a conservation place in conservation and animal rehab in Florida, but like a 3 or 4 hour drive from me.
Mm-hmm.
And she got into the University of Montana, and I hated that job.
Mm-hmm.
Not really because of the work, but just because, like, oftentimes I will say this, I will hear this, and I think that it is true. It's like not really so much about what you do. It's about like who you do it with and like having good relationships and not having – there was another guy in the building.
Yes.
But he was working on another thing.
You had the armadillos, but they can't really hold up a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, it was just like – it was kind of a miserable time in my life.
And what year are we up to now?
We're in 2002 or 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
So YouTube still isn't on the scene yet?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So 2003, I move out here with Catherine. She goes into school. I start doing video production at the community access station. I'm doing camera work and audio work and 3D design and
mm-hmm.
web design. And I'm to start volunteering at nonprofits doing web design or database design, trying to like squeeze dollars out of that.
Yeah.
'Cause Catherine...
And learning on the job by the sounds of things. Because did you have a background in web design?
Not really. Not really, no.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was at the point where you didn't, like, nobody did.
Yeah.
So everybody who did had about my level of experience.
Okay.
Like, I had been doing that throughout college.
Yeah.
And and had been doing, like, the computer programming that I knew was all stuff that I had learned in order to make websites work.
Yes.
And it's not that complicated to do really simple things, it turns out, in computer programming.
Colorful hyperlinks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like easy database design is like, it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you put these things into this part and then you can read it back out of the database and it's all pretty simple.
Yeah.
So that was, and it, as long as you don't like worry about security or like, I came out here and I thought that I would just get a job in a lab. Missoula, Montana does not have any labs. There's actually a pretty big lab in Hamilton, which is not far away.
Okay.
Where they work with, it's like they work with like serious, it's one of the few places in America that you can work on smallpox, for example.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
And I don't really want to work there. That sounds terrifying. So I got I was just sort of like making it work one day at a time. And then I went back to school and I took some microbiology classes and I took some classes in Catherine's department in environmental studies. And I decided to do that, where I didn't do very much science at all, and I learned more like nonfiction writing, like how do you write interestingly and like tell interesting stories, both in sort of like beautiful ways, but also in practical ways. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of a journalism program and a little bit of a like creative nonfiction program.
Was there something there that you were like, this changed how I perceive science journalism, or something where you're like, hey, I never realized that all the things I've been reading up to this point follow this certain, not format, but way of thinking about it?
I think that there was an understanding like that I gained when it was like, I'm going to start reading not just like newspaper articles or magazine articles, but like reading John McPhee, where it's like, this is, you know, it's an immersive thing. It's beautiful, but it's all, and it's also like, I'm learning, but I also feel like I'm gaining like real insight about mm-hmm. the world. Daniel Quammen, you know, Rachel Carson, obviously, like reading that stuff, because we were really focused on environmental writing.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, ended up being so, like, extremely potentially appealing to me. I was like, mm-hmm. this, like, every one of these people who, like, are, you know, who I see as, like, very important writers, and probably a lot of people don't know their names. Like, Janice Ray would be an example of someone who, like, I, like, at the time was like, this is the most important people in the world, and, like, no one knows who Janice Ray is.
Yes.
And seeing that as an opportunity, like something that I could do, but I wasn't that good at writing creative nonfiction.
Okay.
Because I'm not that, like, I'm not very good at beautiful language.
So where did you see yourself going at this point in time?
Honestly, I thought I was going to get a bunch of contacts, and then I was going to work at nonprofits, helping them with internet things.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I was sort of, and that is what happened. Like, after I graduated, I had started a blog called EcoGeek, which is environmental technology stuff. And I started that as a class project.
Mm-hmm.
I did took a class called Starting a Magazine. And so, like, that was my class project.
Yes.
Was I started a blog.
Yes.
It's hilarious to think that it was like,
is it still
like,
online?
EcoGeek's still online. It is not updated.
No.
And I always think, like, I could bring that back. That would be a great YouTube show or something.
Because you don't have any other things,
right, exactly.
Any other pressures on your time at the moment. So you go from being a half wannabe science writer / people working within science, but in the tech side of things.
Right.
What's the jump from there to owning one of the biggest science YouTube channels? In like about 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll try to go faster now. So John and I started, I was doing EcoGeek full time.
Yeah.
That had become my job.
Yeah.
I'd started to try and get rid of all my freelance clients. And my brother, John Green, was like, we should start a YouTube show, because he mm-hmm. was really into these YouTube shows. And he was totally like, it was like the so prescient and like way before its time. And mm-hmm. like the fact that we were able to be successful at all is very much part of the timing of it.
Yeah.
And then as that, like, we were doing a lot of videos. Like, our project was 5 videos a week. And we would trade off back and forth. And it's just like only so many things you can make videos about before you need to, like, be like, I don't know the circulatory system.
Yes.
Here's something I know about.
Yeah.
And so John one day made a video about the French Revolution, and then I made a video about the circulatory system, and it was like, here's educational videos on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And they got lots of views. They did well. And
was that just out of necessity of, I have literally run out of things to talk about?
We were experimenting with a different thing every week. And that was continues to be the glory of Vlogbrothers. Mm-hmm. Just like, we can do whatever we want, and if I have an idea, then I can go after it.
Yeah.
And those videos were hard to make, it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when years after that, we had continued to make some educational stuff, YouTube said, in the next week, we would like you to pitch us an idea that we could grant you money to do more professional-looking content on YouTube.
So they asked you to pitch?
Yeah, they asked us to pitch.
And it became clear later that they had that this was very last minute. They had been working a lot getting Hollywood companies to pitch them on YouTube series. And then in the last like 2 weeks, somebody at YouTube was like, "We didn't ask any YouTubers." And they were like, so they were like, "Shh, we're going to be in a lot of trouble if we don't ask any YouTubers." So they asked us and a few other people to submit ideas. And this was a program that they did not repeat, which I think is unfortunate because none of the shows worked except for the ones that YouTubers did, almost exclusively.
Yes.
And they spent about $100 million on it.
Wow.
But I mean, it's...
Is that a lot of money in TV terms or like real traditional media terms?
Yeah. I mean, for one show, it would be a lot of money. Like the highest budget shows are not much more than $100 million.
Okay.
But like for 100 shows, it's very low budget. Yeah. So, you know, we pitched them two ideas. They turned out to be substantially under what they thought we were going to charge them to do it. And so they told us we could do both.
Okay.
And that was SciShow and Crash Course.
Yes.
So that is how the company started.
And up to this point, I'm guessing you and John had been filming and doing all of your own stuff, editing and scripting, if you're going to script some of the videos. Yeah,
they're script. Most of them now are scripted.
Yes. I'm not sure back in the day how many of them are. But then it must have been quite a step to go, okay, we're going to take on a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to hire some people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So weird. Like, I don't know if if the way that I'm remembering it is that John and I had just both hired personal assistants because we had realized that there were a number of things that were falling through the cracks, like opportunities, but also like I realized that I'd been paying for two cell phones for 6 months. Because like I just hadn't have time to like notice that I was paying like I had paid like $100 a month for 6 months for something I wasn't using.
Yeah. Okay.
So things like that were falling through the cracks, and like the money could like they could easily pay themselves pay for themselves just by saving us money. So I had hired Michael Gardner, John had hired Stan, and Michael still works for VidCon, Stan still works for Complexly. And we had those two people, and part of the reason we hired them was like in case we ever needed to hire other people, they had experience hiring people.
Oh, so you were thinking ahead at the time of hiring
potentially,
them.
Potentially, yeah. Okay. Like that might happen someday. And then within 2 weeks we had, you know, a lot of money to hire people with, and we needed to hire like six people.
Yes.
And we had hired one person ever in our lives. But luckily Stan and Michael knew how to do that, and we, you know, I like did Craigslist stuff, and we hired some people who are still here. Nick Jenkins is still here. Blake was one of our very first hires, and then Caitlin was in our second round.
And what was it like going from being just the boss of yourself and having a personal assistant to actually being someone's boss?
I didn't. So the relationship that I had with my assistant was very much not like a very boss-like assistant, a boss-like experience. Yeah, like he would come over to my house and be, because we didn't have an office at that point. He'd come over to my house in the morning and be like, "What? Like, here's what's going on. What do you want me to do?" And then he would leave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, like, he was very good at anticipating my needs and remains an extremely effective problem solver. And that was exactly what we needed. I have had to several times, like, change the way that I think about my relationships with employees in probably fairly subtle ways, but, like, ways that are, I think, important. Like,
such as?
There are, even when we're hanging out socially, like certain jokes I shouldn't make.
I see, yeah.
You know, and like when
the... Recognizing the power imbalance.
Yes. And when the company comes up especially, and all, you know, like not being flippant about what is their livelihood, you know? And also that like little things you can say can, you know, be perceived as bigger than they are. And then... And you know, actively thinking about that and being like doing your best to remain aware that, you know, So I'll take it back to this. I feel like when you have power over people, like, you get less and less feedback about, like, doing stuff wrong.
Yes.
And also you're so busy,
mm-hmm.
and you also internalize your importance, mm-hmm. and you know, you're being given a lot of signals that, like, your perspective is important, and, like, and yes. also, like, I think that is to some extent true. Like, mm-hmm. your time is very valuable, and so, like, you do have to be really, really careful with your time. But a thing that can be lost is introspection and, like, thinking about the effect that you're having on other people. So just taking time every once in a while to be like, what were the conversations I had today or this week that could, and, like, how could that have been taken out of context? And also having very frank conversations with you know, higher level management people, being like, you need to, like, my favorite thing in the world is when someone tells me a thing I did wrong.
Okay.
And so, like, that's never going to make me mad.
Yeah.
And if I hurt somebody's feelings, or I made somebody feel, like, you know, unappreciated, or I need to make people feel more appreciated, mm-hmm. like, that is, every time you give me that feedback, I will think you're a better employee.
Okay.
And also, like, making that clear in staff meetings, like, when one of my employees sort of, like, gently ribs, makes a little joke at my expense,
yeah.
like, complimenting them on that,
yes.
in whatever way, like, making it clear that is good.
Okay, yeah. I do want to get back more at some point to the science side of SciShow.
Yeah.
But I am also very aware that you have written a whole book.
Yeah.
Loosely on the, in my head,
mm-hmm.
it's a book about fame that happens to have robots in it.
Yeah. Have you read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you were doing it, whether it's like, I'm going to talk about sci-fi. Oh, wait, I also have some stuff to talk about fame here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was definitely intent. Like, when I first started writing it, I was just like, it was a book about, you know, a weird, crazy thing happening to a person. And you know, it was a sci-fi book.
Yeah.
And then as I like continued to have hard time writing it, I realized, like, why am I not like bringing some of the more unique perspectives I have to mm-hmm. offer to this? And then it became very easy to write. The majority of the feedback that I've gotten is like, this is a great, compelling sci-fi adventure, but, like, it also, like, the thing that I like most about it is it gave me a chance to think about, like, how weird right now is, and mm-hmm. how we're not maybe thinking about it right.
Yeah.
And that is really what I, like, that's when I had finally the energy and excitement to write the book.
Okay. How has fame changed you? Because you were older than a lot of the YouTubers are now that are going through it.
Mm-hmm.
And YouTube, like, it's almost like you were making your own niche. Rather than now, it's almost like people can almost expect some degree of fame if they become successful as YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, how do you think fame has changed you personally?
Definitely ways. I'm more confident.
Mm-hmm.
I have more, like, I. I have this weird big relationship with an entity that is not a single human, and mm-hmm. it's a very important relationship in my life. And so, like, I am aware that, like, when I'm in a public space, I could be being observed by someone who knows who I am.
Yes.
And so there's sort of this idea in my head and in the back all the time that, like, you can't be a super dick because – and not that I, like, would be –
Hank Green, don't be a super dick. Yeah. How just to cope
myself,
with fame,
like, you
just don't be a super
you
dick.
You can probably still be a super dick,
yeah,
a little bit, but yeah. not for long, probably.
Yeah.
So
at what point?
Yeah.
Okay. At what point do you think, oh God, I'm now famous, so famous that I can no longer be a super dick?
I think it was a gradual process, and it's almost like, you know, I don't like confrontation anyway.
Yeah.
And I like to appreciate people. I think that mm-hmm. it's one of the, like, greatest ways to feel appreciated. I feel like the more you recognize other people for their work, the more you recognize that your work is valuable. Mm-hmm. And so I like to do that generally. Once you like order your second sandwich and someone's like, oh, do you make SciShow? You're like, maybe I should be giving $2 tips instead of $1 tips. Because like, these are like my, they're like, yeah. I mean, it also humanizes service employees some. Yes. You know, when you're like at like the Wendy's drive-thru and they're like, oh man, I love your science videos. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, you...
You're no longer anonymous to them.
And also they're no longer anonymous to you.
Okay.
Which is great, yes. I think. Because I think a lot of our society is a little bit built to turn people into commodities and to have people think of them as like, you know, just like sort of the machine that delivers the hamburger.
Yes. And I mean, even the title is like... influencer, like the audience yeah. are things to be influenced.
That's not the job title mm-hmm. of the job that we have. Mm-hmm. And don't let anyone tell you different. That's what marketing people call us because they need a word to help them sell ads, and that's fine. And they can call us that. But whenever a YouTuber calls himself an influencer mm-hmm. or any kind of creator, I'm like, come on. Like, say what you do.
Yeah.
Say, like, the kind of content you make followed by maker of that kind of content.
We're either influencers or we are capital T talent. Both yeah. of which make me laugh yeah. so much.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, YouTubers are, like, calling a YouTuber talent is demonstrably incorrect. Because it's not like anybody who is like, you know, a YouTuber is somebody who just, like, reads a teleprompter. Like, you do everything.
Yes.
You like, you're writing the scripts and you're editing the videos and you're filming and you're on camera and mm-hmm. you're behind the camera and you're working, selling your brand deals and, like, yeah. So, like talent has always been a little bit of an upsetting word to me.
Yeah.
Because it's weirdly diminutive, despite the fact that it's obviously a positive word.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's just not true of YouTubers mm-hmm. who do lots of other things besides on-camera stuff. It's just an old word.
Yes. The flip side of reading your book, and I think I actually messaged you after I finished reading it, it felt so allegorical. It felt like you were seeing all of these young YouTubers and you're just grabbing them by the shoulders and shaking them and being like, no, don't do this. Like, yeah. I am writing this so you don't have to do this.
Yeah. I mean, like, there were points when I was writing the book when I felt like I was writing it so I didn't have to make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I needed April like
past
to make
you
a
or future you?
No, future me.
Okay.
I needed April to make a mistake that I saw in my future
mm-hmm.
and, like, walk it through and be like, what would that be like? And say, not good.
What is the biggest thing you're worried about in terms of how fame or success will affect you?
Making me less compassionate.
Okay.
You know, like making me think that it's like that. I think that when you experience like sort of like the good side of the bell curve,
mm-hmm.
there's some natural like protective instincts to make you think like, why am I experiencing the good side of the bell curve? And that is often, you know, I deserve it. And so like, why do I deserve it? Because I'm better than other people. And why am I better than other people? All these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's a thing that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
I've always hated that perspective when I saw it in other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I'm worried about that. And I also think that like there is also like a legitimate and probably rational push as you get more power, influence, control over other people, money, all kind of the same thing. To be more like sort of ruthless with how you imagine things working. And like that is something as simple as like sometimes you have to fire someone.
Mm-hmm.
And like in my daily life, I would never tell someone that they're bad at their job.
Yeah.
Like I would never walk up to like a friend and be like, well, maybe you're bad at your job.
Yeah.
Or like, I think you're bad at your job.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you're so bad that you shouldn't have your job anymore. Mm-hmm. But that is a thing you have to do
yes.
as somebody who owns a business. And that does thicken your skin. And it does like, you know, like I've still never fired anyone without crying.
Mm-hmm.
But like, someday I probably will.
Yeah.
And not always in the room when I'm doing it.
Yes.
To be clear.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. So why are you letting me? Yeah.
No, I have done it
oh, God.
In the room.
Okay.
But it's rough, man. Like, it's a...
No, it must be hard.
Yeah. And obviously not as rough as getting fired, though.
Yeah.
Like, so that's another thing to,
Like, are there ways in which you've seen yourself change as your career has progressed that you're like, I kind of wish that hadn't happened?
Well, I mean, there's this problem generally of like the size of an audience, and like when you have an audience that's like 10,000 people, you can have more connection with, you know, the super fans are probably going to be like 500 or 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And that's a manageable number of people to have in a forum or to have in your comments, and you recognize their names.
Yeah.
And like, but you lose that, and like having a, you know, 4-hour long signing line where you're going to have a, you know, 15 to 30 second interaction with each person does, like, it, if, you know, I know that I'm delivering value and that people like are there and they're like, it's a good thing. And like, I do everything I can to stay engaged, mm-hmm. and listen to people and care about, you know, them. And I feel like I do, because
yeah.
it's like, they're like often bring interesting stories, and also like they're the reason I have a job.
Yes.
So like, I appreciate them. But I do feel like you lose some of that. And I think that that's just an inevitability. And also I think that, like, back to the thing I was saying earlier, you just like, as you get more power, you become a little bit more like, you know, you think differently about how it can be wielded,
mm-hmm.
and maybe in a way that considers people's humanity a little less.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I would not like, that I like to avoid.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, here's how everything functions. And so we should just make it efficient so it functions well. And we should, if we want to change things, then we have to do X, Y, and Z. And so let's do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, well, but what about human beings?
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you, when you start to see things, and this is very hard when, like, I imagine if you were to run a company with like 10,000 people, like, you just see all of those people as like individual resources. You don't see most of them, I imagine, you don't see as, you know, people, because it's too big. It's too big to see as, mm-hmm. people. But when you have 30 employees, it's just, yeah, it's,
you know,
that. I don't want to have a company that's much bigger than that.
Okay. And within the realm of YouTube, how do you define success?
So I think that there's a product question there. Like, how do you define what is a good video, like, before you upload it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think to me, that's like, does it respect the audience? Is it accurate? And is it entertaining?
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's sort of like the, you know, the Venn diagram that is hopefully overlapping. And then there's like the related but separate question of like, what is success in terms of like how well the video does once it's uploaded? And those things have an influence on that, but also things like your title and your thumbnail strategy and, you know, whether you can get the video picked up on some blog or Reddit or something.
Mm-hmm.
And also like ultimately how much money. So then there's that. And then there's like the related question of how much money does it make through AdSense/brand deals/ increasing public appreciation for your content that might result in crowdfunding.
Yes. Is one of those more important than the others?
Well, I mean, none of them happen without good content.
Yes.
So like, I don't think that it matters how good your title is, how many clicks you get, how many views you get, if your video is bad, because those people aren't going to turn into viewers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, that's much more important. Like, having somebody who appreciates your content comes back for your content. Like, if you're basically tricking someone into clicking on the video, then, which is not something I've never done.
But they're not going to stick around.
Yeah.
And how do you think that SciShow has been managed to be so successful for so long? Because longevity is not a common thing on YouTube.
I mean, I feel like it's more common than on TV. Like, what TV shows are around for 10 years? You know, it like never happens.
Doctor Who,
yeah.
The David Attenboroughs.
Yeah.
There are quite a few TV series, certainly within the BBC.
Yeah, okay. But the vast
you majority can come will up be with for some. About
like the Simpsons have been around for like 20 years or something. Mm-hmm. But like, the biggest, like most shows get 7 seasons max.
Yeah.
And then like the audience has just changed, moved on, mm-hmm. content is different. Mm-hmm. And so like, I think SciShow is maybe approaching its 7th year, in its 7th year. And mm-hmm. like that is weird, but I feel like it's less weird on YouTube because no one's around to cancel you.
Okay, yeah.
And so you can shrink and there isn't like some executive telling you to freak out and change everything and add a new character and, you know, ruin the show.
Yes.
So that's me addressing that. I don't think it's that exceptional. And also like there isn't that much time to go on. Like we don't have that many years
of
YouTube.
We don't have like 50 years of YouTube. But still, it seems like it certainly appears from the outside like you've been doing a fairly consistent thing over those 7 years.
Right. And it is. Like that is something that is interesting to me about SciShow is that our formats haven't changed that much. And it's honestly something that I worry about because like YouTube's changed a lot in those 7 years and there are a lot of different formats that more work goes into and that are very great videos that I love a lot. And when I like think about it, I'm like, are we getting left behind by somebody who might be doing something more innovative?
What do you think of as, what are some videos that where you thought, man, that's, I kind of wish that we had the scope to do, because obviously you can't just change up your format. You know what, SciShow, now we're doing slow motion videos.
Well, I mean, you can change up your format some. You can, not every day. Like SciShow uploads 7 videos a week. So one of those videos could be more complicated.
Yes.
I mean, watching Verge Science videos, like The Verge is doing amazing science mm-hmm. videos right now. And they like go on location and they interview scientists and they film them very prettily. And, you know, sometimes it's like a Skype interview, but they still film the computer that the Skype interview is on very prettily, which I think is great. And so that's wonderful. There's also some individuals who are doing it all on their own in a more sort of CGP Grey style, voiceover kind of style, like Wendover Productions and Real Engineering and that those sort of channels like rose together a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it in educational content is all voiceover, which I find super interesting and like want to know why, whereas SciShow is much lower budget because we can spend time just recording a face.
Yes.
Which turns out is cheaper than doing a bunch of animation.
Hell yeah. If you can get away from animation, my God, it takes so long.
Yeah. So, and those videos tend to come out much less frequently, and so they're kind of an event every time they come out. Mm-hmm. There's also much longer videos that are really interesting. Like I watch a channel called Defunct Land, which is a history of weird theme parks.
Okay.
It's great. Lindsay Ellis making like 45-minute cultural commentary on, you know, movies and TV shows. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, they're on the platform, there's more and more longer content. So like it's something that we think about and like what would we do if we did something longer.
And do you think, like, do you have meetings, like, at the end of each year where you review over SciShow and be like, is our format still applicable?
No. We do that much more frequently than that, I think. just in general, like, with reviews of the content, like, what content's doing well and also what content are we really proud of?
Yes.
Some of those, like, I feel like when we say, like, what content are we really proud of, like, if that seems like that's just our opinion, okay. But also I think that, you know, the videos that are going to get tons of views are different from the videos that are going to inspire more loyalty among the audience mm-hmm. and like have people like really feel like we're providing an important service for them and the world.
What video are you proudest of?
Oh, gosh.
This is one of the questions I ask everyone.
I mean, I have a lot of different channels. Should I?
Across all channels.
Oh, God.
Or, okay, maybe give me some that spring to mind. Or you could pick, like, for this channel it's that, for that channel it's that.
We did a video on SciShow once called The Science of Anti-Vaccination that mm-hmm. I really like. That is a video that is designed to get clicked on by people who are anti-vaccination, but is a video that is actually about the cognitive biases that lead all of us to bad conclusions mm-hmm. and that we are all susceptible to. Mm-hmm. So that one I I like, we just recently did a video on the Flint water crisis and why that happened, how it happened, and also like the science of how it happened, mm-hmm. which it turns out is not trivial, mm-hmm. and that it was in some ways a failure of science, and both of science and practice, like the protocols people were using to test for lead were bad, and they were intentionally bad. Mm-hmm. They were designed to lower the levels of lead in the tests versus the level of lead in the drinking water. And there was also bad science, like, at the treatment plant. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's something that I didn't know about at all until I read a book about it called The Poison City. And, you know, we were able to, like, take some of our learnings from that book and apply it to that video and also shout out the book. So, like, on SciShow, that those videos are two that I really like and that I worked on personally. So most SciShow videos I don't work on the script at the script level.
So what is your role now within SciShow?
Boss. So like CEO, making everybody happy, taking care of them when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. Host, obviously. And then I work some on a little, like I've tried to be hands off with this but I still work some on like approvals for like what things we're going to take on. So like pitch approvals.
Okay.
But I mean, the SciShow team is so great now. Like they don't need me for any of that. And also when I've recognized now that I can't write a SciShow video anymore because they're too good. And so I will write the intro and I'll write like, and here's what I think the episode should be about. And like, if there's any particular insight that I have, like if there's chemistry in it, it's often useful for me to have a chemistry background in the room to sort of like, you know, write a couple things down that will make things clearer and will save research time. So because if I write a full script, Blake will be like, no, this is bad.
I see what you've done. Fire the man that wrote this script.
Yeah, why are we working with this freelancer? He's way too off the cuff. Vlogbrothers has been around for so long that I have a very hard time picking a favorite video because there's lots of different categories, mm-hmm. too, of kinds of content that we've made.
Is there a video you're least proud of?
Sure. It's called Nerd Girl. It's a rap music song in which I rap about my nerdy love for a nerdy girl that I have taken off YouTube.
Wow. I was not expecting such a quick answer to that. Why are you least proud of it?
It's it's extremely cringy.
Okay.
And you can't watch it, which is the only reason I'm talking about it. Yeah. If it was still on YouTube, I wouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah.
And it's also like, it's just got like a little disrespectful to women. So as a person who like is in many ways like the leader of a community of people through my videos, like I think about the audience as like communities, and I've always done that. I think that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Have realized at some point that it was kind of important for the kind of work we were doing to be to like not have certain parts of our persona out there, for example, referencing our
Your hugely misogynistic streak.
Anything to do with like our sexual interests.
Yes.
It's just like, we could talk about the fact that like married and straight and like I'm like comfortable with that, but talking about like the things I am interested in as a man who has a sex drive is that doesn't feel like a part, like aggressively non-sexual is what I'm going for.
Okay.
So I just like, I feel like that's, it like takes a complication out of it.
Yeah.
And I don't, and like, you know, I occasionally will see somebody who's like, I mean, is it me or is like Hank Green kind of hot? And I'm like, that's very sweet. I am not going to engage with that.
Yeah.
And I think that's partially like, you know, married happily. But like partially like it adds this weird component. And this is much easier as a 38-year-old guy. But it adds a component of like why – like, am I leveraging that for views?
Oh, yeah.
That I don't want to engage with.
We have had discussions like this on this channel.
Yeah.
Like me and Maddie and other women in science.
Sure,
it's like,
yeah,
how much are we leveraging our looks and our sexual appeal, even if we don't want it to be?
I mean, I do try to separate, like, so, I mean, this is terrible, what I'm about to say.
Okay.
But, like, in content creation, traditionally in Hollywood, like, obviously people who are going in for hosting gigs have to look a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, not maybe like a certain way, but they have, like, they're going to be attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of that that's like sexual energy. That's like, I like what I'm looking at. And there's a part of it that's just like, it is like a thing that I will think about less because it's what I expect to see. And so if you put something in front of people that is something they don't expect, then they will think about that instead of about the content you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
which is why one of the reasons why it's harder for women to make science videos, because it's like, wait, I had to think for just a fraction of a moment
mm-hmm.
about the fact that you're a woman talking about science,
yeah.
because that isn't quite what I expected.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm a misogynist. It's not that I don't like it. It's just not quite what I expected.
Yeah.
And so there's this a little, like, and as a, you know, when you're in content creation, when you're competing with everyone else in the world for screen time and for attention time on TV, you want to eliminate every possible barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that. And I think that if you do eliminate every possible barrier, then what you're basically saying is people think that, like, their expectation is one thing, so let's fulfill the expectation every time and never give them anything even a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always going to look like me and Johansson, which is the
and
same.
And the many other people that look like you and Johansson. Yeah. And are there any other aspects of your life? Because you also have a podcast called Delete This, which I find fascinating,
mm-hmm.
which is almost about that personal public barrier with regards to the internet, and particularly with you being internet celebrity and all that, or mm-hmm. just celebrity, I suppose I could say now.
Yeah, whatever.
Internet celebrity, and how you do separate out, because it started off you and your brother almost doing daily videos to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been almost that expectation to start off with that you're going to be kind of open about your life.
Mm-hmm.
Have you changed that as it's gone along? Do you have any like rules in your head that you're like, I really shouldn't post stuff about this on YouTube or on the rest of social media?
I don't have hard rules. I have one. Like, I don't show my son a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the reason for that is in not talking about being a parent as much, certainly comes up. But like, the thing that I don't want is for that to be content.
Yeah.
So I don't want my son to be content, not because I think that it's like, because I said that and that seems gross. You turned your son into content? I don't think that that's that gross. What I'm afraid of is that I will begin to see him as a path to Instagram likes.
Yes.
Or like good video content. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't want to have that be a part of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. Like, and then everything else is just sort of like case by case. And it has changed over the years as we've like, you know, as your audience gets bigger, functionally, if you have a group of 100 people, there will likely be nobody who's really terrible.
Mm-hmm.
In that group, if you have a group of 100,000, there's likely going to be a couple people who are pretty awful.
Yes.
And so as it grows, like, I don't like film the exterior of my house, for example.
Very sensible.
Yeah. I feel like generally I have I put less of myself out there,
mm-hmm.
which I feel bad about, like, because I think that's like actually part of something that I really like about mm-hmm. what I do, and I wish that I was able to do it more. I don't know, but I'm more apprehensive about it now, especially because, like, you know, as politics has gotten a little hotter in the U.S. and I obviously have a specific worldview that I'm tied to.
Do you wish you could do it more because you think you'd be able to change people's opinions?
No, no. I wish I could do it more because it's something I like doing.
Okay.
I just liked that more.
Yeah.
And especially because like the project started as like John and I sort of opening our brotherhood up. Mm-hmm. And like that was a part, and like turning our brotherhood into content didn't feel dirty. It felt like a project, a shared project, and something that people could learn from and also be a part of. Mm-hmm. And I think that has continued to work. Like, I do feel maybe a little bit more like I need to. I don't know. Weirdly enough, I haven't thought about this that much, but I like the ways in which it has changed. It feels like I'm just a little bit less, like I'm less there, and the content is more there.
Mm-hmm.
And I even have started to try and bring that back on Hank's channel, which is a side project that I do, and just be like, I'm going to turn the camera on and I'm not going to script this, and I think that works really well. But in a world where like people have very strong opinions, I do feel like it's harder as a person who really does not like being disliked. It's kind of hard to it may be a little bit scary to have both like my opinions and also myself on the platform at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I went through all of the tweets that I have ever posted and deleted about half of them. Not even because I think that they would get me into trouble, but it's just like, I'm not sure that I will want those personal details about my personal thoughts online in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would much rather have been through my back catalogue of tweets and now there is nothing people can use against me.
Oh, that's funny, because whatever I've said that might could be used against me is not from Twitter. It's from pre-Twitter.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how you would find any of that stuff.
Penultimate question. What one thing do you wish people knew, like the audience you wish they knew that you don't think they know?
About the world?
About you or about your channel. Oh, not okay. About the world. Not just here's a fact, but like wish more people knew about.
There's a cloud of space gas that smells like raspberries.
Is there?
Yeah.
Really?
It's like got the raspberry smell
in
it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So now we know that. But no, just kind of like misconceptions that you feel like people have about you, your career, YouTubing, that because we can't perfectly share ourselves with our audience often through our videos that might not get through.
I don't know, man. I've been making videos for a long time. I've said pretty much everything. I will say, I don't know if this is something that I wish people knew or that I almost try to not have people know, but like John and I wanted this, like we must have wanted it, you know? It wasn't just like, oh, blah, 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 this happened. And maybe that's a little bit less good of a story, where instead of like, come along on this authentic and relatable journey,
mm-hmm.
in which two brothers just happened to get famous. But like
I sought greatness rather than just having it thrust upon you.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of both. But yeah. Not that it was actually that much greatness.
Okay. Yeah. Like that. And final question, where can people find you?
Oh, gosh. God, I thought it was going to be hard again. Worried.
I mean, we can go for more hard things. But I'm aware that we have been going for about an hour and you're an exceptionally busy person. I could keep chatting all day.
Well,
I think you have other people to attend to.
What are you going to have your... My son's getting his first haircut today.
Very cute. Yeah.
So after 2 years of flowing curls... Mm-hmm. You can find me at youtube.com/SciShow and Crash Course, mm-hmm. and Vlogbrothers, mm-hmm. and also my new podcast, SciShow Tangents, mm-hmm. which is really fun, which Sally was
which
on.
Which I was on, yeah.
But I don't know if it's out yet.
It will be once this is out. I'm not even thinking about editing this until January.
Okay.
Nothing is going up on my
channel. Well, I don't know. We've done a lot of... Oh, you're right. That's going to come out before January.
Yeah. It will be out by then. Yeah. That's probably will be the quiz show that I was on.
Yeah.
But which is your favorite... thing to be on? Your favorite what
are you just asking? What my favorite show was?
No, not your favorite show, your favorite platform.
Uh,
like where people say, where
my favorite platform is YouTube.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, by
I wouldn't
long
say my favorite is YouTube.
Where do you like better than YouTube?
Twitter. I love Twitter.
You have a different Twitter experience than I do.
I love the people on Twitter. They are wonderful.
What do you do on... Can I just have your Twitter follower? Like,
yeah.
Not your Twitter followers, but your Twitter follows.
Yeah.
I need to know exactly who you follow and unfollow all the people I'm following.
I think there is, because I don't make so many videos, I feel like there is a huge expectation when I do post a video. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself of, oh God, this is the first video after 6 months or something.
Right. Yeah.
Twitter.
Oh.
I can just tweet.
Let me suggest uploading 9 videos a week.
Yes.
And then you will feel less that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Twitter is more immediate and has the personal connections that old school YouTube used to have, and that it doesn't anymore.
I think that you have found a nice corner of Twitter.
Oh, I love my Twitter.
Yeah.
They're the best.
I think that if you look deeper on Twitter, you will find a lot of... Well, I guess that's true of YouTube,
too. Oh, I just blocked anything.
Yeah.
The Twitter blocked word section, mine is very long.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That is the case for my comments.
Yeah.
I have a long, long list of blocked common words. But my Twitter is completely open.
Yeah, great.
I think I have not blocked a single word on Twitter, which maybe I should.
Maybe you should. So, on that note, thank you very much for being on Cyber Science.
Yeah.
You can go and follow things, links to stuff, and questions are in the description.
All right, yeah. So, if you leave any questions in the comments, I'll be watching. I'm curious what other people want to know.
Do you lurk on other people's videos?
Oh, yeah. I watch a lot of YouTube videos.
Me too. I watch so many. I love lurking on things in general.
My favorite thing is that John and I use the same account. We are always logged into Vlogbrothers. Mm-hmm. And so like you can watch see the history of your Vlogbrothers, you can see the history of your YouTube viewership, and I can just like scroll down.
Do you not see videos like, how do I tell my brother that he's the most annoying little piece of shit?
Well, and then, I know that John does that too. So when I watch like a video of like a wisdom tooth extraction, I'm like, let's just take that one out of the, I'm a little ashamed of the pimple popping videos I've been watching.
Oh, I love a good pimple popping video. That and wood turning videos.
Ooh,
I just get into a hole. Yeah. They're so satisfying. Mm-hmm. Cool. So we're going to watch those. I'm going to share my Twitter follows. And you can see another Sofa Science, hopefully in less than 6 months' time this time.
All right.
Cool. Bye.